them position the queen and set the pawn and start chance some like the septicon. Any time delegates have a discrepancy, we'll have lurking shot with some long weapon.
Welcome to the Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world at kpfk.org. My name is Lisa Adler, and I am your co-host today, along with Damon Azali. In 6 weeks, California voters will be asked to vote on 13 ballot initiatives on issues ranging from a woman's right to choose to government regulation of land use to a series of infrastructure bonds totaling $42.7 billion. Today, we will examine two of these ballot initiatives. Penny Newman, Executive Director of Center for Community Action and Environmental Justice, joins us to discuss Proposition 1B, the $19.9 billion transportation bond that, if passed, would give over $11 billion for highway and roadway construction. Evelyn Shen, Executive Director of Asian Communities for Reproductive Justice, will join us to discuss Proposition 85, a parental notification law that would require physicians to notify the parent or legal guardian of a minor seeking an abortion 48 hours before performing the procedure. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. We'd now like to welcome Penny Newman to the show. Penny is the Executive Director for the Center for Community Action and Environmental Justice, based in Riverside, California. She joins us to discuss the transportation bond, Proposition 1B, on California's November 7th ballot. Welcome, Penny, to the show. We're pleased to have you on.
Thank you, Lisa and Damon.
So, Penny, on the ballot, as you know, there are a whole series of general obligation bonds that are going towards statewide infrastructure projects. And we're going to go into depth on the transportation bond in particular. But first, we wanted to get your take on general obligation bonds in general.
Well, I think their role should be held for things that benefit everybody. And on this particular one with the transportation bond, it kind of ends up competing with education, healthcare, public safety, family services. So instead of it being a revenue bond, which would put the price of a project on those who benefit from it, we are now going to take it out of the general fund, out of our kids' schools, out of the health care for our families, and so on. So I think it's really the wrong type of funding for a transportation bond.
Okay. So let's look now into the transportation bond. Almost 60% of the bond is going towards freeway and road construction, right? And another 16% towards improvements in air quality through improving the movement of goods in the state's ports and on the state's freeways. So let's talk about whose interest does this bond really serve. We know the money is going to be coming out of the general fund, which means it will be coming out of, will be competing with the needs of education and healthcare. But in addition, what are these? Who are these projects really meant to serve?
Well, I think we need to be real clear about this bond. This bond is put forward in order to fund the expansion of the goods movement, the logistics industry, those things that move goods that are imported into the ports of L.A. and Long Beach through the communities of Southern California and then across the United States and actually internationally. So this, you know, while it may talk a little bit about easing congestion on our freeways for commuters, and it may talk a little bit about transit agencies and public transit, it may throw a crumb here and there for other types of projects. The main goal of this is to provide funding in order to do those improvements or those expansions of infrastructure that will make it easier to put more trucks on our freeways, expand rail service, so that this industry can thrive.
So then it seems like the issue is that the government, that through this bond, the government is trying to subsidize industry, right? So pay for their improvements in goods movement and pay for some of their air quality improvements. So what's wrong with this? I mean, who should be paying for these air quality improvements?
Well, I think if we look at it, the type of projects that have been listed by the governor's office, mm-hmm. their interagency working group, and in coordinating goods movement, are expansion of Union Pacific's intermodal facility, near dock facility in Long Beach, of actually constructing BNSF Railroad's intermodal facility, which would be directly across from an elementary school. It would go toward subsidizing or providing incentives for trucking companies to switch to other less polluting fuels, for the ports to operate a little bit greener. But all of these are using public money to give to private industry to do things that they should be required to do right mm-hmm. now. It shouldn't be on the taxpayers of California to make sure that the trucking company isn't killing the residents around it. Mm-hmm. That should be a part of doing business in California. And I think we have the ability with the ports and the industry wanting to expand that there's really a hammer there. If the government was really serious about reducing the pollution and the burden on infrastructure for our local communities, that they could use this opportunity right now where they want to expand and tell them, fine, but first you're going to deal with the problems you're already creating in our communities, the health issues that are there. You know, we have more than 1,400 premature deaths every year due to particulate pollution, the diesel that comes through Southern California. Mm-hmm. We have 90% of the cancer risk comes from mobile sources, our transportation output here. And 70% of that is directly the diesel emissions. So there's really a heavy cost burden put on people already mm-hmm. on the public. And the industry itself is not paying its fair share. Recently, the governor vetoed Lowenthal's bill, SB 927, mm-hmm. that would have put a fee, a $30 fee on every container that comes into the port. And he vetoed that because they didn't want to be unfriendly to business. Well, you know, these businesses are not too friendly to our communities right mm-hmm. now. And it seems like kind of adding insult to injury to have our communities being hurt so badly and then turning around and asking them to pay for more.
Right. So earlier today, Penny, when we were talking, you were saying that this is part of the model of greening and growing the goods movement industry and the ports in particular.
Right.
Can you explain a little more what you mean when you say greening and growing?
Well, we've been after them to start addressing the fact. I mean, it's to the point where the science is so strong on this. We know that this industry is killing people,
mm-hmm.
just flat out killing people. And the low-income communities of color are the ones who are directly impacted the most. So we've been really hounding them to, you know, you can't ignore the science anymore. You have to step forward. So now they're talking about greening and growing. Mm-hmm. And what we've been saying is that, you know, the idea is you can't grow until first you green.
Mm-hmm.
Their understanding is much different. And I'm afraid that if they get this money, once they have the bonds passed, that they are going to forget about the greening and simply go for the growing.
And, I mean, what are Democrat legislators saying about this? Like, when you pose to them the need to first green before growing, are there any allies in the state legislature? Because it seems like all the Democrats are behind this bond.
Yeah, I think we're seeing another example of where both parties have let the people down.
Mm-hmm.
The system is simply not working for hardworking communities. The Democrats have embraced this along with the Republicans and with the governor promoting it. And I think a lot for their own personal benefit and ambitions, but also because they've been sold on this idea that this is the only economic engine available to them. And they're willing to overlook the damage done to our communities in order to get a quick buck, a few extra tax increment increase, a little more, few low-paying jobs to go along with it. And so they're turning their back on the real underlying damage that's being done and the long-term damage that's going to happen throughout Southern California.
So this is Damon Azali and Lisa Adler talking to Penny Newman on Voices from the Front Lines, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. And Penny, just to kind of continue on the government agency accountability, what I felt like a lot of these bonds that Schwarzenegger had put on the ballot was a direct attempt to try to say, okay, the last election, everything that I wanted to pass got taken out. And this is a way, basically, to try to get the Democrats on his side. Because we all know that Democrats like to spend for infrastructure, like to put out money and whatnot. So do you think that actually has worked? And what do you think in terms of going into the next election, if this does pass, what does that do for Schwarzenegger? What does that do for the Democrats, et cetera?
Well, I think the Democrats have given Schwarzenegger a platform to look good on. I mean, he hasn't looked good on anything else. And I'm extremely disappointed with our Democratic leadership, who would sell out our communities in order to expand their own personal interests. I'm really concerned about where we're going with all of this, and very appalled by elected officials who look at the very superficial solutions that come along, you know, let's change to a different fuel or cleaner trucks, when the science tells us that's not going to do anything if we simply increase the number of trucks that mm-hmm. we have. And so instead of looking at the deeper issues underlying the health impacts, the community's lack of quality of life, they go for the quick and fast superficial answers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was an industry conference held not too long ago called Faster Freight, Cleaner Air. And it kind of summarized this whole idea of elected officials think, well, if we can just keep the trucks moving and the traffic moving, everything will be fine. When the science is telling us that at slow levels there may be some improvement for larger particles, but for the ultrafines, the diesel emissions, the aerosols, that faster traffic actually it gets higher, and that's the part that really causes the damage. So, you know, they don't even understand the issue, and yet they put forward these solutions that are just going to make the problem worse.
Right. I mean, that's also an interesting thing in terms of a lot of times this money in terms of going to infrastructure for freeways is to, you know, add another lane. So you end up having, you know, quicker traffic for like 10 seconds, and then they just, people buy more cars, they clog up the kind of freeways. And one of the answers to that we've been doing in terms of the bus riding union campaign was to try to get a bus-only lane down Wilshire, which is like the busiest public transit corridor in the nation. And a lot of what we've heard in terms of the opposition from the Democrats, from the city council, from officials in the Department of Transportation were saying, you know, you're going to basically slow down goods movement. You're going to stand in the way of industry and commerce and et cetera, et cetera. And our answer was like, yeah.
Exactly.
You know, and I think that's the key thing is if we are going to have more better environmental health, more environmental justice, is actually prioritizing public transportation and disadvantaging the automobile. And I think that that's similar to things in terms of the big trucks. You know, if you look at the 710 and all the trucks that go there and all the stuff is spewed out into the air, it's getting us further down the rabbit hole of global warming.
Exactly. And in all of the discussions, you know, we've sat in on these committees over and over again with all of the big players. You know, the idea was, no, we need to expand the freeways, put more lanes on, which the whole purpose of that is so that they can put more trucks on there.
Right.
That's not going to solve anybody's problem except for the port that can then process more goods out here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really goes to the bottom line, which is our elected officials, really, who do they represent? They certainly are not looking out for the best interests of our communities.
So, Penny, in terms of that, because I know you've also done stuff in terms of the government agencies, I think just in general, just really, really important. I know there's some organizations who don't work in terms of trying to pressure the government, but I think that you have been doing that. We've been doing that.
Right.
And we've been coming up with a lot of barriers, and a lot of the barriers have actually been, you know, the Liberal Democrats.
Yes.
So want to see what have you, what has your work been in relation to actually pushing these government agencies, and what are some of the tactics that you've done that have have kind of maybe taken it outside the boardroom?
Well, one of the things that, that we find is when we go into meetings, committee meetings, as our supervisor or other areas, and you bring in Hispanic and low-income communities who aren't used to speaking in front of these boards, that they're not only ignored, they are ridiculed.
Mm-hmm.
That we have our elected officials telling them, you don't know what you're talking about, why are you standing up here, you know, you need to be educated. Learn the language. I mean, on and on. And it's gotten to the point where there is real venom that comes from these people. And so we've decided that it doesn't make any sense for us to put people through that type of torture, but that to take the message outside of that boardroom. And so one of the things we did, we were trying to get our elected official to not put warehousing, which draws thousands of diesel trucks to them, next to schools and homes. And in doing that, you know, they've been kind of saying, well, they flat out told us that the science is good, yeah, your arguments are right, but simply the profits are too great for us to turn it down. And so mm-hmm. we put up a billboard along Highway 60 warning people that they were entering an area of high hazard, and to call and inquire before they buy out in our area. So the billboard on Highway 60 said, welcome to Riverside County. We're number one, dirtiest air in the nation, deadly health impacts. You know, call before you buy. And that really created an outroar. And so, you know, those are the kind of tactics, I think, that really put in their face what the reality is for people, and that they can't just hide behind a board decision, that they're going to be called on it in public.
I mean, I think that's the interesting thing, because it's the same thing that happens with us in terms of the venom you speak of. A lot of that is when you're actually challenging, because I think a lot of times the progressive, and put quote progressive, because I think it's very vague what progressive is at this point, it's when you hold them accountable, when you say, hey, this is what you said, why aren't you doing it? That's where the backlash comes in. So one of the examples for, you know, thanks for all the KPFK listeners that came out to the city council a couple months ago when we were trying to stop the mayor's proposal for an increase on the trash tax for 1,000 more cops.
Right.
It was really interesting because actually in La Opinion, there was a picture of one of our members that had a sign up that says, you know, no to the, you know, 1,000 more buses, 1,000 less police, and then you have a police officer grabbing it from her hand. She's, you know, she's a Latina grandmother that's holding this up, and then there's a cop, you know, the cop grabbing it from her hand. So I think one thing that was really important about that was, it was all the same thing that you said in terms of we're speaking and they're like listening. They actually listened this time. It was interesting. But they're like, well, you don't really understand the issue. This is really what's happening, et cetera, et cetera. But really the main objective for that, besides just putting it out on record, was to have an exposure for our members. So our members came out there and were like, this is completely disgusting how they treat us. We can't even believe this. It makes me want to organize more. It wants me want to go to my church and talk to people. So I think the political exposure is a really kind of important thing. And I think the other thing is just a lot of the stuff around taking it to the streets. So for us, it's kind of the boardroom piece, but then also, you know, coming up on October 17th, we're having a rally in front of City Hall on, you know, Mayor Villaraigosa, who, you know, was saying, we're trying to say, hey, this is what it means to have an agenda for environmental justice.
Right.
And we want you to do A, B, and C.
I've often been asked, you know, what the difference between an environmental justice organization is and an environmental organization. And I try to explain to people that environmental organizations do a lot of research. They may do testing. They really, you know, prod into things and write a report. While an environmental justice organization looks out their window and they know the issue and they know the solutions real fast.
Mm-hmm.
But they're living it. And I think, you know, we're doing the same thing. On Wednesday, There is going to be a press conference with officials from Riverside and San Bernardino on 1B, and what they're doing is trying to get their piece of the crumbs out of this. They want to make sure they get some of the money in order to put toward railroad crossings, the grade separations, which cause an inconvenience for upper-income people. It's not where the greatest pollution is. So we will be having a counter-demonstration there at their press conference, pointing out that the rail yard they're going to be standing over is polluting more people than ever will be polluted sitting at a rail at a railroad crossing. You know, and the absurdity of having people live next to a rail yard 24/7 being exposed to these very high levels where the trains sit and idle forever, and having our elected officials wanting a few bucks in order to deal with a very, you know, trivial in comparison issue, that we've really got to get real here.
So talking about the crumbs that you were mentioning that they're trying to get in Riverside for the railroad crossings, I mean, I think the other component is that there are other environmental groups that are also behind this bond. I mean, given everything you've said today, you would think, well, how could any environmental group actually support this, right? And it seems like it's the same dynamic of them wanting the crumbs. So, you know, the few billion dollars that are given for public transit, which I think we should talk about in a minute, but, you know, which Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa is being, you know, lauded for, and, you know, what a great job he got, $4 billion for public transit. So a lot of environmentalists are holding on to that $4 billion, right, without looking at what the rest of the bond is going for, right, and actually the destruction it could cause, the destructive environmental impact, but then also not even taking a good look at what that public transportation money can even go for.
Right. And I think, you know, we've really, I mean, it's the poor state of public interest groups, I think, at this point. I mean, it's how bad it has gotten, is that we're willing to settle for the crumbs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, $4 billion out of, you know, almost $20 billion. And I think when we look and we see what's going to be funded with that, it can only go toward capital costs. We can't spend it on operations. And if you look at any transit agency, that's what they need. They need operating funds.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't go toward. So we're willing to sacrifice the other, you know, $15 billion or so that's going to really go to really bad stuff that's going to hurt our communities in order to get a few crumbs here. This isn't the right mechanism. It isn't the right funding mechanism. It doesn't have the right projects involved in it. It doesn't take us in the right direction. And I think that there's a better way to do it. So let's kill this one, and let's go back to the legislature. Let's open up the process so that it's not just a few invited in to negotiate something. Let's get beyond them and put some reality into this whole discussion and come up with something that funds public transit in an appropriate way, that provides operating expenses, that really looks at the needs of the community and not simply the needs of the big corporations.
So I think we have a couple more minutes here, and I think I want to pick up on something you said in the beginning when you were talking about how this is basically the public funds going to pay for kind of the public health effects of what goods movement and commerce have on our communities. So one question is what are some ideas that you have in terms of holding those folks accountable and actually making them pay their, I mean, I think they should pay all of it, but pay even their fair share as one. And then secondly, does some of that for you include money for offsetting the, not offsetting, you can't really say offset, but money to basically help the people who are communities of color, in particular poor communities that are suffering from asthma and, you know, health issues because of the pollution and the particles and whatnot?
Well, there's a number of ideas that have been generated from the communities who are directly impacted by this industry. And one of the things that we've all agreed on is that we have to stop any of the future development of the logistics facilities, the warehousing, the rail yards, the intermodal facilities, the port expansion, all of that, until they come up with cleaner, safer technologies. One of the things that this bond doesn't do is look at new technologies.
Mm.
We don't look at electrified rail. We don't look at maglev. We don't look at any of the new technologies that are out there, the 21st century. We're investing in the old polluting stuff because that's what the railroad and the truck industry has. And so they're not interested in converting to anything new. We should be, as a country, we should be looking to new ways. And in Europe, they have been doing that. So that's one of the things. I think that's the primary thing. Before we become the logistics center for the world, let's transfer to some clean technology, some way of looking at it differently. Again, going beyond the superficial down to a deeper level. Once we do that, and we've been able to truly green up the industry and truly make changes in these communities, I think we have to look at the damage we've already done to these communities and the families who live in them. I know in Wilmington one of the demands has been that there be a health fund set up to help address the illnesses created by the port operation and by the rail and by the trucks. And I think in our area the same holds true. You know, we want some way where communities who can't afford health care anymore to be taken care of because of what their neighbor, these polluting facilities, have done to them. You know, in our community, USC's Children's Health Study found that our kids have the slowest lung growth and the slowest lung capacity of all children studied in Southern California. The industry needs to be held accountable for that.
And I think that's real interesting because when we, so the Bus Riders Union is a project of the Labor Community Strategy Center. In the early 90s, we had a campaign called the Labor Community Watchdog, which was actually in Wilmington fighting against Texaco. And that was actually one of our demands, was saying that basically we wanted a funded health clinic that deals with the health effects on the community. So I think that that's a continuing thing, that it's good that we're continuing to say it. Just a quick plug, because I know this was almost going to be on the actual ballot this time. I think a lot of the stuff around the technologies, I agree with you. I think some of the technologies that are being proposed, like, say, the maglev train, I would disagree with, because it was actually there. This is the second, actually, election it got bumped for, but there is there was a bond measure trying to raise, I think it's $9 billion for a maglev train that goes from Los Angeles to San Francisco with 10-minute headways. So if folks don't know what 10-minute headways are, it's basically, you know, a train leaves every 10 minutes to go over, you know, 400 miles. So we look at, you know, the Wilshire corridor, we look at the Vermont corridor, and the buses there don't have 10-minute headways. So that's just for people to understand coming up. That is another huge infrastructure project that they're trying to actually put. That's a general obligation bond that is going to have tons of interest. So,
yeah, and I think that, you know, there are better ways of moving these goods than what we're doing now, and we should be looking at those. I think we also should be looking at what are the real needs of the majority of people in our communities, and those are the low-income, hard-working people who are trying to get to and from their jobs. I mean, it's not for the SUVs going on vacation out to the desert or what. The real needs here are, how do we get people to jobs, and how do we create jobs where people actually live? And how do we create livable wage jobs so that people don't have to work three and four jobs just to get by? You know, and so it goes to a whole discussion about equity. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, one of the things that this 1A or 1B really holds up is that there's no equity in this whatsoever. It's got the public paying for facilities that are going to hurt them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the people of California are smarter than that. I think that they've put up with enough lies and deceit and miscommunication, misinformation, that they'll come to understand that voting for this is simply going to tax them to hurt their own families. And we need to stop doing this, and we need to start looking for deeper solutions, real solutions, solutions that make sense for the people and not the corporations.
Great. Thank you, Penny. So we are out of time. And if folks are interested in learning more about your organization, though, how can they do that?
Our website's ccaej.org.
Okay.
Phone number is 951-360-8451.
Great. And here in Los Angeles, the Bus Riders Union is going to be doing our own voter education and outreach on opposing Proposition 1B. So if folks are interested in getting involved in that, they can give the Strategy Center a call at 213-387-2800. So thank you, Penny, very much.
Thank you.